Welcome in to the Wrestling Brethren Podcast. This is episode 387. Tonight we have a lot of news. We have AEW Dynamite as we roll towards Revolution. Dance, dance, Revolution!
Oh no.
With me tonight With me tonight are Seth Zillman and Jared Aubrey. As you can tell, fellas, how the hell are you?
Boy, it's a very busy week for wrestling. Obviously, we've got a lot to talk about, and then we got two big shows. We're going to talk about one. We're only going to talk about one. The other one's a New Japan show. But boy, WWE PLE at 5 in the morning. So it's definitely going to be an interesting weekend.
Do you know how you see those memes online? And it's like, you know, tell me you're from the 80s without saying you're from the 80s, and somebody shows like a picture or something. So I went to storage to pick up a specific Jets jersey for Laurent Brossoit, because, you know, he was starting in goal the other night. And while I'm digging through the box in storage, can you believe the wrestling t-shirt I found was Don Callis and the Invisible Hand? So tell me you're a wrestling fan without telling me you're a wrestling fan and hold up a picture of that t-shirt. I think that would work wonders.
I thought you were going to say Hulk rules, brother, but that was more the 90s.
Well, you know, I did find one. Was it the 2000 and the year that he was like, it was kind of, he fake kind of ran for president or whatever. It was like Hogan for America. I can't remember when it was, 2004, 2008. Yeah, I found that one too.
Nice. All right, well, let's kick things off with the news of the last 48 hours. And we're going in chronological order here. It was announced that there will be a biopic collaboration between The Rock and his Seven Bucks Productions production company. And this is the same man and company that did the movie on Paige, aka Saraya, and her family. But now this one is going to be for Ric Flair.
I would imagine that would have a little bit different feel than Paige's movie, but that's just a hunch. First off, if we're truly going to do The Nature Boy, and I think he'd be the first person to tell you, that movie would probably be rated R.
Well, that's what I was thinking. It was like, this would be the Motley Crue dirt of wrestling movies, right? Like, it's, you know, the man lived the character and the lifestyle in, you know, especially in, you know, the 70s and 80s. I can't imagine the partying that man did. And I wonder how they're going to represent that appropriately on screen and not offending everybody.
Yeah. I've heard it said, you know, there's the people that say that, some wrestling characters are the real personas, just jacked up. I've heard sometimes Ric Flair dials it down to be Ric Flair.
The 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, the 10s, the 20s. How long is this movie going to be? All right, next news item. Austin Theory has a confrontation with a member of the Australian news media. This is the second incident of this nature regarding this PLE, and the first was a couple of weeks ago with Grayson Waller. I'm not sure what Australia's problem is and why they keep asking about wrestling being fake, because that's what starts these confrontations in the first place. Hey, Australia, catch up with the rest of the world. This was a question from like 45 years ago. Get with the program.
Yeah. Because I think it was almost 40 some years ago to the day that Dr. D. David Schultz knocked around John Stossel. And that either 40, it was 84 or 85, something like that, when that happened.
Don't we know that F words are bad? Have we not learned this yet?
Apparently it hasn't gotten down to the folks in Australia yet.
Yeah, just, you know, the toilets go the opposite ways there, so I don't know.
Well, let's put this guy's head in and let's get a first-hand account.
I set him up, you knock him down, Josh, attaboy.
Next news item. 2K has released the full roster for 2K24, and there are over 200 options of playable characters.
Jeez,
so many options and possibilities for my GM and my universe. One of the legends is actually Umaga, So if you want Jarrett to run a full-on Bloodline storyline, you certainly could.
Yes, please.
I feel like there's a butt coming.
Well, there is. And the butt is that Brock Lesnar and Vince McMahon are not a part of the announced roster. And the early report from Insider Gaming is the source, says Brock is in My Rise or other story-based modes, aka Showcase, but will not be a playable character. In other words, when your character goes through My Rise or you're going through the WrestleMania Showcase, he may be a historical figure, but he is not an option to choose as a playable character. And Vince is just not in the game, period.
Can't, it's not terribly surprising because, I guess it's a little bit more surprising about Brock just because I don't think anybody would really want to play as Vince McMahon anyway, unless they'd like want to put him as a, against Stone Cold or something like that. But yeah, I think it's a sign that Brock's probably gone for a while now, if he even comes back at all.
Yeah, I was saying, if gone, you know, for not for a while, but for good. Yeah, the erasing continues. That's really all I got to say.
Erasure, not just a group, music group from the 80s.
Yeah.
Well, I was playing on the quickening from Highlander there.
But yeah, I know. Well,
yeah, we're all good.
There's lots of pop culture references.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, the next news item, WrestleVotes on Twitter reports that WWE has interest in Sylvester Stallone for WrestleMania 40. No, not in a match. Calm down. With him being tied to Rocky and the Rocky series and franchise, which is based in Philadelphia, even though Sly is from New York, WWE is in communications with the actor to be involved in WrestleMania in some fashion. Now, he has history with WWE as he is the one that inducted Hulk Hogan into the Hall of Fame and obviously worked with Hogan in Rocky III. So this should be just another celebrity moment, hopefully not in the ring, a la, you know, Shane trying to bow up and he pops his knee out or whatever it was. So, yeah, hopefully just maybe a host or something, ring.
Yeah,
ring,
or maybe even make an in-character appearance. Because if I recall correctly, there is an actual Rocky statue in the city. So,
yeah. So, yeah, as I'm fumbling for my words here, I'll just quit while I'm ahead.
Well, yeah, like you said, if it's a appearance of some sort, I mean, where's the harm in that? You know, you could make the argument that Rocky III is really what kind of put Hogan on the map on a national sense, and it's what got him hired in WWE. So, yeah, 40 years later, why not have a little bit of nostalgia for that?
Yeah, I'd be all right. You know, as you said, with an appearance, I don't, you know, an extended, you know, involvement or something may not be what we need. You know, the man's 70 something, I believe. I mean,
I think still he's in mid-70s, yeah.
Yeah, he's still in fantastic physical shape, but I mean, you know, Expendables is still a stunt man. So, and let's just have him show up and wave and say hi and be all good with that.
Next news item, based on an interview with Chris Van Vliet, which should be dropping soon, Robert Roode reveals that he's been cleared for an in-ring return medically, but says he's happy as a producer. So we have potentially seen the last of Robert Roode as an active wrestler.
Yeah, well, he's I think older than we think. I mean, he's been around for 20 years now, because I remember he was going back to the weekly pay-per-view days of TNA. So he's been around for a while. So, I mean, if he's happy, then, you know, more power to him as far as I'm concerned.
Oh yeah. If he's happy, all good. I still think his first kind of, you know, main run in WWE, I think Glorious could have been a little bit bigger. I was a fan of it.
But hey, like that. Yeah. Great theme music.
Oh yeah.
I was trying to find the exact quote but I couldn't. I didn't. This was one thing I didn't happen to copy down. But he did mention that this was his actual goal when he came to WWE, was to be a producer at some point. So even though it's not great to be injured and have to have spinal surgery, at least he's where he wanted to be. So yeah. Good for him.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
What more can you want?
Right.
So this is what I wanted to do and I'm doing it. So yes. Enjoy.
Right. And hopefully the back holds up. AEW will hold the Forbidden Door pay-per-view at Arthur Ashe Stadium in New York this June. And because of that, AEW Grand Slam will still happen this September, but the location will be Louis Armstrong Stadium in Queens, New York. Louis Armstrong Stadium is located on the same premise as Arthur Ashe Stadium.
I'm assuming it's a little bit smaller. They'll have the bigger place, the bigger show at on pay-per-view at the bigger arena, and then they'll probably just do the regular TV one. At least that's what I'm assuming the idea is. I don't know the size of the places.
Yeah, I don't have any stats on them. Finally, last news item, Randy Orton narrowly avoided retirement. While speaking to Sports Illustrated, which I thought they folded, when the fuck was this interview? He said the following. Before I left, I'd got to the point where Riddle had done everything he could for me as a tag partner. I could barely stand for a long amount of time. Taking my kids trick-or-treating that Halloween, I would have to sit in between the houses because I just couldn't be on my feet for that long. I had stenosis, degeneration all over my lower spine, and a slipping disc, Orton explained. Wow. Every time I extended my spine, it would slip and press on those nerves. I couldn't sit and take a shit without pain shooting down my legs or my feet going numb. I couldn't stand. There were times when I would move and I'd end up on the floor. So obviously now he's had the surgery and he's quote unquote back to normal. But I have back problems and I have spinal stenosis now, obviously not to that extreme, but I can feel his pain literally and figuratively. And for him to be able to come back and work at a high level, more power to him and the surgeons, God bless him. But that would scare the hell out of me.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I don't have stenosis, but I can definitely relate to back issues. It's no fun because you need your back 100% of the time, pretty much, unless you're like laying on your back. And even then, it's your back.
Yeah, I'll complete the back pain trifecta. I dealt with that for years to the point where I could barely stand up for 5 or 10 minutes at a time. So I'm all good now, but I know what it's like. And yeah, again, not the stenosis, but severe pain. And it's like, it ain't fun. So you know, we had all heard that it was, you know, taking forever to get cleared and we thought he might be done, which would be a shame. That's the wrong way to go, I guess, to end your career, but glad it's all worked out.
Yeah. At least he can put his career to rest on his own terms, you might say. He can retire when he wants to and not because he had to due to injury. I think that's probably the best way to put it.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. All right, moving on to AEW Dynamite for February 21st, which was last night as we are recording this. Jared, I'm going to guess and go on a limb and say you did not see this.
I have barely had time to take a breath this week, let alone watch any TV. So, yeah, you would be correct, sir.
All right. Seth, did you see the show?
Yeah, Dynamite? Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
Okay, good. In the lead-off match was what I was looking forward to all week, and it wasn't even the biggest story or happening on the show. So, buckle in, folks, because here we go.
Oh, no.
The show opens with FTR versus Mox and Claudio of the BCC. And guess what, folks? This ends in a time limit draw, just like last week's match or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was. A wild brawl ensues at the end. And then after we go to commercial and come back and get words from FTR backstage, Mox and Claudio come and the brawl starts again. And out of that brawl, we get the announcement that this rematch has been added to Revolution. So we will be getting the rematch of FTR versus BCC.
Which I'm sure will be a stipulation match of some sort, maybe a 2 out of 3 falls, something like that. So yeah, I bring it on. I kind of figured they were going to a draw once they started counting down to where there was like 2 minutes left. But I mean, that is how you do time limit draws. You do it where it's when it makes sense. You know, if that makes any sense.
Jared, are you looking forward to FTR versus BCC round 2 at the pay-per-view?
Well, I mean, if they're going to try and find a way to make this big to settle the score, it's like, geez, let's have like a tag team, you know, death exploding fire match with Mox involved. I mean, what could go wrong?
Yeah, right. Could you guys try to hit each other a little harder, please? I don't sense the realism.
All right, more blood, people. Let's go.
Yeah, Mox is dry. We have a problem.
Oh, dear.
Okay, the next match featured an international title defense, or maybe it was non-title. I'm not sure, but Orange Cassidy defeated Mike Bennett of the Undisputed Kingdom. Before this match, backstage, Orange Cassidy is barely cleared by medical, but cleared nonetheless, and he chooses to wrestle tonight. It turns out we find out later that this match was made last minute due to Jeff Hardy's broken nose, as Jeff was supposed to be heavily featured on this show, but they had to do some rewrites. The real surprise was after this match when the Undisputed Kingdom does a beatdown and everybody's figuring, oh, who's going to come out to save Orange Cassidy because all his friends are already injured or taken out. And it was Jake Hager making the babyface save for Orange Cassidy. Now, Hager's from Oklahoma and they were in Tulsa. Okay, hometown pop, but he doesn't really have any history with Orange Cassidy, and he's been a heel since day one of AEW. So,
yeah, and I don't know if he has much history with the Kingdom either.
Yeah, this kind of felt a little weird, but
wow.
But
we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, I loved that run in. I mean, I wasn't expecting it either, but like you, it's like it made sense once I realized where they were. The dude comes out in like hot pants. It didn't even look like wrestling trunks. It looked like hot pants and a pair of cruiser sunglasses. And he comes in, clears house, knocks everybody out of the ring and saves Orange Cassidy without losing the sunglasses at all. He did all of his moves. He knocked everybody out of the ring. Sunglasses stayed perfectly on his face. That was freaking amazing. That was awesome.
If you notice here now with Jake turning, they've taken every single member of the formerly known Jericho Appreciation Society and turned them all babyface eventually. So a heel stable goes good in the end, I guess.
I figured when they did that segment where they broke up, because it's really what led to Chris Jericho turning babyface, I kind of think that was the seed planted for when they're all good guys, they will get back together in some capacity, whether they'll still be called the Jericho Appreciation Society, because that didn't really sound like a babyface stable name. But I think that'll probably be a next step, is they'll have a reunion of sorts.
Speaking of more people from that group, we go backstage and Renee Paquette is talking with Angelo Parker, who's waiting for Ruby Soho to show up so they could go on a date. And they get ready to go, and a big white SUV, I don't know if it's an SUV limo or just a big fancy SUV, pulls up, and Ruby's like, oh, is this us? And Angelo's like, no, we've got a Lyft over here, if that's okay. And she's like, oh, yeah, no problem, whatever. So they walk off stage left. They're like, oh, we'll find out who comes out of the SUV when we come back from the break. And I'm like, what is this, WCW? Mm-hmm. And we come back, and out of the white SUV steps Ric Flair. And he is met by Renee Paquette. and he kind of passive aggressively complains. As I'm watching this, I'm totally thinking of you, Seth. I'm like, Seth's worst nightmare coming true.
Mm-hmm.
Because Rick feels disappointed that he's not been a bigger part of the road to Sting's final match. Says he's going to explore some options. And he ends up knocking on the locker room door of Matthew and Nicholas Jackson. He just wants to talk. Let's talk about some options. So are we really planting the seeds that Rick is going to turn on Sting on his way out the door? Or are they just making us think that, and he's really going to help Sting in the end?
That was my hunch, is in the end, he's going to feign like he's siding with the Bucks, when in reality, he's going to have Sting's back. That's what I think is going to, because since it is a retirement match, and this truly is a good guy versus bad guy after the bad guy has embarrassed the good guy, I think Sting has to win this match. And yes, I know that would mean he's undefeated and somebody will scream about he didn't put over anybody. Well, he put over Darby by being with him for 4 years. that's what I would say. And obviously the Bucks don't need to beat Sting. They're not going to gain anything by beating Sting. So I think it's all going to turn out to be, it's going to have Sting ride off into the sunset with a victory. The villains get what's coming to them. Dirtiest player in the game. All those other cliches you want to throw all into one angle there. So if that's what they do, I'm fine with it. I really can't see them embarrassing Sting in his final match on his way out. And that's supposedly the last we ever see of him. That just doesn't seem like something AEW would do.
That's something 90s WCW would do.
Yeah. And Japan would do it too, but on a different extent.
Like for a moment, like Sting would be, hey, you know, just turn on me one more time, you know, on the way out. I don't know. Yeah. I'm joking, but yeah, it did seem silly that would be a thing in his last match, given he'd, you know, it is his last match and he's done and he have no way of getting any heat back. So what's the point?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if he was going against Darby one-on-one for his final match, then yeah, he should lose. But with the Young Bucks, no, he should win.
Well, I disagree on your point that the Young Bucks don't gain anything by beating Sting. They gain the tag team titles by beating Sting.
Okay, you got me there.
So, and if Sting wins, what do you do with the titles after he's gone? So,
right.
We'll have to see how that plays out. Predictions for that show in a couple of weeks. But moving on in this show, we had a promo segment from Daniel Garcia and eventually Christian Cage. Tony Schiavone's in the ring with Daniel Garcia and confirms that Adam Copeland is not medically cleared to compete and will not factor into a match at all at Revolution. Daniel Garcia talks about getting this opportunity as now he will be facing Christian Cage for the TNT title. And he talks about how he fared in the Continental Classic and how the crowd supported him. The patriarchy comes out and Christian Cage runs down Adam Copeland and runs down Daniel Garcia. Christian then brings up Daniel's deceased father, a Christian Cage staple at this point.
Oh, man.
And he finishes by saying, at Revolution, I don't want to be your opponent. I want to be your father. And Daniel Garcia says, since you want to talk about dead relatives so much, why don't you come down here and I'll put you in the ground right next to him. I was like, damn, that was a good line.
Yeah.
So they brawl with Nick Wayne and Killswitch and this is more building up towards this match that we now have. I don't know what Adam Copeland's injury is, but they did write him off last week with the concerto.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just kind of continues what they'd been doing in WWE. Not that it's based off WWE, but that kind of had been the pattern with Edge, is he wrestles for a little bit, gets hurt, has a big return angle, rinse, repeat. So I would imagine he's probably going to show up either at the pay-per-view or the show after the pay-per-view.
Jared, I'd ask for your thoughts, but you kind of made him known during my recap there. So next we had Timeless Toni Storm defeating a local jobber.
Oh my.
The best part of this was Tony was introduced as hailing from Stage 7 in Warner Studios. That was her hometown, which was great. The end came in 2 minutes when Tony used Deonna Purrazzo's finisher in the squash match, the Venus de Milo, to pick up the win. Immediately afterwards, Deonna was introduced and had her match with Madison Rayne. And as Deonna came down the ramp, Tony was leaving and they had this face off where, as you were watching, the Tony side of the screen was in black and white and the Deonna side of the screen was in color, which is such a nice touch when they do that. I love that. They make mention that Madison is the person who trained Deonna Purrazzo, more tying in of stories and history. Towards the end of this match, Madison Rayne was dropped on her head from a slight botch of a move, and the match was not stopped as Madison allegedly waved off the trainer or doctor. And then Deonna used Tony's signature submission, break a leg, which is an ankle lock, and picked up the win. People were concerned about Madison after being dropped on her head. Madison herself confirmed today on Thursday that she is okay. Next, we had a promo pre-recorded from Sting and Darby Allin, where Sting reveals that his father passed away just last week. This was an intense, emotional cut promo, and it did make you feel and think that Sting and Darby Allin will win because they are out for revenge on the dastardly heels.
Yeah, that even by Sting standards, I thought it was a pretty good promo. It was different. It was definitely a difference because, you know, he wasn't screaming or howling or saying the crazy things. You know, that this was like the old veteran, loading up his gun for one last shootout, you might say. That's kind of the vibe it had.
I mean, he didn't do this the big, you know, cup the hands over the mouth. Wow!
Right.
No, it wasn't in front of the people, so it was not Showtime.
Great.
Next, we got promo from Wardlow that was kind of fire. He mentions Goldberg without actually naming him. He says that I was the next big thing, which is kind of a Brock reference also. But apparently the rocket that strapped to my back was put on upside down, because ever since then, I've been driven into the ground and screwed over and over and over again. He says he is the one homegrown day one AEW original megastar. And the fact that he's had zero title opportunities when just 2 years ago, people in every city were chanting his name that had not been heard or seen like that for decades. The people in the back should be fired and jailed for not giving him those opportunities. Then he mentions CM Punk without naming him, mentions MJF without naming him, and says that he laid waste to those two guys. And the one that's the best in the world, his body is still failing him from that beating. And MJF, he squished him like a bug. And the last time he was in the ring with the current king and champ, Samoa Joe, he choked him out. So in his mind, he is the best in the world. He is better than you, and you know it, and the most dangerous man in the room. Now he calls himself the uncrowned king of AEW, and it's time that he ate like one, because he's been starving and he's tired of scraps. He closes out by saying, if you cross me and get in my way, this is no longer wrestling. This is war. And he slams down the mic and he exits stage left. Probably the best promo Wardlow's ever cut. And
yep,
you could say, tell me when he's telling lies.
Yeah, he made a good case, especially when he says, you know, the current champion and the last two champions, he's beaten them both. I mean, just saying that alone is a good reason to have a title shot.
That sounded like one hell of a promo, but I was questioning, the first thing that popped in my head is like, no title opportunity. Wasn't he just the secondary champion not all that long ago, like in the last year?
Well, he means world title.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like he was the TNT champion or something like that. And he, like, in storyline, chose not to be part of the world title tournament thing. I guess just because he wanted to defend the TNT title. But yeah, little bit of insider baseball for me a bit when he was talking about the beginning about the Rocket Pack and all that stuff. But in the end, like you said, it was a great promo and it definitely made sense in the end. So, yep, good job all around.
And I think what this is planting seeds for is for when, if and when he becomes world champion, and then Adam Cole is going to demand that he surrender the title to him.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. What is this, Andre the Giant and Ted DiBiase? Get the hell out of here.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what? Why would Wardlow give him the title?
Because they're in the same faction.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
Oh, yeah. And Cole has even hinted at it. There's been some subtleties there.
Oh, no, he's said, outright said it. There's no hinting. He said it.
Cole said it. It's one of those times you go back and watch it. Cole said it. You know, he'll do what's right, and then he looks at Wardlow, and Wardlow smiles. And then when Cole looks back into the camera to finish the promo, Wardlow stops smiling and goes back to a sneer. You know, like a, oh, yeah, right. You know, so maybe I'm looking too far into it, but that's what I saw.
I'm totally going to give this title to you. And in the main event, we had the trios match that made zero sense. As Samoa Joe teamed up with Brian Cage and Swerve Strickland, defeated Hook, Hangman Page, and Rob Van Dam. When Samoa Joe made Rob Van Dam pass out. Now, what was interesting about this match was, of course, towards the end and after the match. There was a point towards the finishing segment where Joe had Adam Page up in the Muscle Buster, or he was trying to anyway. Hangman slipped out, but kind of rolled his ankle, and he went out to the floor. Cameraman, after the match, cuts over to Hangman, and Hangman is holding his ankle and kind of waves off the cameraman saying, don't film me, don't film me. So the early word around was that Hangman might have broken his ankle while escaping the Muscle Buster, which would have removed him from the three-way at Revolution. Later, it was confirmed early Thursday, today, that this was an angle added by Hangman himself and is completely a work. This was reported by several outlets, and Jerry Lynn, who is an ECW legend and current AEW employee, says that this should not have been reported because, quote, God forbid we have a cliffhanger going into next week, end quote. Well, here's my response to that. Unfortunately, this is the technological age we are living in, and AEW should have done a more better and more careful job of not letting the truth get out and should have been able to play it up for at least a week. So that's on them. And then a report after that came out that Hangman might have a personal issue that prevents him from being at the pay-per-view. So the ankle angle was done as a cover story just in case.
I love it. Might have a personal issue. Hey, it could be anything. You might have a cold. I don't know.
So that is how Dynamite closed.
It was not the best Dynamite they've had, but it was still entertaining. Everything made sense, you know, so yeah, it was a good show overall.
And I'll give you no comments on the show as a whole because I didn't see it.
But what you heard, what did you think? No, I'm just kidding. I have a feeling these couple of shows leading up to, I think, well, there might just be one left. One Dynamite left as the go-home Dynamite, and that'll be next week. Because then the pay-per-view will be on that Sunday. So that should be interesting to see how much more ramping up we do. Our next episode here for the podcast will be our predictions for a 4-match Elimination Chamber card. Although just before we went on the air, I saw a tweet from WrestleVotes saying, don't be surprised if there's a women's tag team title match added, dot, 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 to the kickoff show. Kickoff show? I am not waking up at 3 a.m. to watch the Kabuki Warriors. You're going to be lucky if I make it at 4. Kickoff show. Get the fuck out of here.
Oh my gosh.
So, anywho, we will cover anything that goes down on SmackDown, even though it was recorded last week. But we will at least throw in some details and recap. And then we will give you our predictions for the 4-match card. I'm not even worrying about the Kabuki Warriors because they can go F themselves. Not the Kabuki Warriors, but WWE on the whole for making it a whole hour earlier. So, yeah. Anyway, any final thoughts before we sign off on this Dynamite episode? Pun.
Well, better late than never for me here, but.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm like 4 matches. I mean, the Elimination Chamber is going to be, you know, those are big matches, but 4 matches, it just sounds like they could do so much more.
Mm-hmm. Well, probably each chamber match is probably going to be an hour. So,
yeah, it's 4 matches, 5 segments. The 5th segment is Grayson Waller having the Waller Effect talk show with Seth and Cody.
Christ.
Where I would imagine they're going to set up the tag match that we're all anticipating. Especially since The Rock earlier today called them Cody and his little girlfriend, Seth Rollins. So, anywho, we shall see how that goes, and we will be back on the air tomorrow. So until then, once again, thank you for listening, downloading, and subscribing, and we will talk to you next time. Thank you for listening to this episode. You can subscribe to the Wrestling Brethren podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast fix to hear the latest discussion from the Wrestling Brethren. Visit the mothership, if you will, at twbpodcast.com, the online home of the Wrestling Brethren podcast. Let us know your thoughts, questions, and comments on Twitter /X at TWBPShow, on Facebook at facebook.com/BehindTheSquaredCircle, and on Instagram at The Wrestling Brethren. You can follow Jarrett on Twitter /X at TheBaconRev. You can follow Seth at LordXandrax, and you can follow Josh at SouthpawJosh. Thank you again for listening, and we will talk to you soon with more from the Wrestling Brethren.